Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1303 features three classic stories from Life Rattle writer Vanessa Mariga. Vanessa Mariga was born the younger of two daughters in Sudbury in 1979 and grew up in Lively, Ontario, just outside of Sudbury. She went to an all-girls school in Sudbury before starting University of Toronto at Mississauga in 1998. Mariga graduated in 2002, then went on to study graduate journalism at Humber College. Vanessa Mariga has written a series of stories set in and concerning her hometown. On tonight's program, we're going to hear three stories by Mariga about family members and young romance. Let's listen now to Vanessa Mariga here on Life Rattle. And you're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And Life Rattle stories often contain strong language and adult situations, so listener discretion is advised.
Lunch with Uncle Clyde by Vanessa Mariga. The sun beat through the patio doors in my Aunt Pat and Uncle Clyde's dining room. The June air hung heavy, my shirt stuck to my back, I squirmed in my chair, and Smokey, the oversized shepherd collie cross, panted on my bare foot. The stench of dog breath wafted up to my nose. The television rattled on in the next room. Aunt Pat had phoned me that morning. She needed a couple of hours out of the house. Aunt Pat needed someone to stay with my Uncle Clyde. I watched Uncle Clyde pick at his mashed potatoes, green beans, and applesauce. His hands shook as he tried to cut his green beans. I steadied them for him. I had to be extra careful with Uncle Clyde. He fed his pills to the dog when no one watched. I think that my picture should be developed from the trip to Niagara Falls that I took with the dogs last week. Uncle Clyde grinned, unable to hide his excitement. I didn't know if I should argue with him or just humor him and play along. Doctors diagnosed Uncle Clyde 7 years ago. He fought the brain cancer hard. One morning, 6 months ago, Aunt Pat woke up to find him sitting cross-legged on the kitchen floor. Uncle Clyde had placed a Cheerio in the middle of every tile on the floor. When Aunt Pat asked what in the hell he was doing, Uncle Clyde curled his knees into his chest, shook his head, and cried. Moments of lucidity grew further and further apart. Uncle Clyde, you didn't take a trip. You've been here all along. My stomach knotted. My throat grew dry. I did so. When the bills start to roll in, you'll be sorry. I have proof. I went to Niagara Falls, God damn it. Don't you dare call me a liar. Uncle Clyde's body shook. His fork dropped to the floor. Okay, when I see the bills from the hotel room, I'll believe it, I said. I took the dogs to the wax museum and the haunted house. You should have seen it. It was crazy. Uncle Clyde giggled as he spoke. Wow, that sounds pretty nuts. I didn't think that they let dogs into those places. I fiddled with the hem of my blue t-shirt. I looked out the patio doors. The Vermilion River wound through Uncle Clyde's backyard, and waves sloshed against the dock. Uncle Clyde's fishing boat sat in the driveway, covered with a blue tarp. Uncle Clyde's face fell. His shoulders slumped. He looked down at his plate. I looked at the top of Uncle Clyde's head, now bald except for wisps of hair and scarred by unsuccessful surgeries. I was doing it again, wasn't I? Uncle Clyde whispered. Yeah, I didn't know what else to say. I wish that you wouldn't play along with me. It makes me feel like a raving lunatic. Don't give up on me that easily. Please. Uncle Clyde's pale blue eyes grew watery. I rested my elbows on the table and placed my face in my hands. I drew a deep breath in and exhaled slowly. Smokey panted underneath the table. Count to 10, inhale and exhale. I pulled my hands away from my face. Uncle Clyde yanked the placemat out from under his plate. Uncle Clyde rummaged through a pile of old magazines, crossword puzzles, pens, and empty pill bottles that cluttered a corner of the dining room table. Uncle Clyde pulled a pair of scissors out from underneath the previous week's TV guide and began to cut the placemat into tiny pieces. "What are you doing?" I asked. Uncle Clyde placed the scissors on the table and looked at me. "Can you find my mom in this picture?" Uncle Clyde pushed the bits and pieces of placemat towards me. "I want to talk to her. Can you call my mom for me? I just want to talk to her." My stomach ached. A lump grew in my throat. I forced out an answer. "Uncle Clyde, Grandma has been gone for 3 years now." "Well, where did she go? When is she coming home?" He wrung his hands. "Uncle Clyde, Grandma, your mom, is dead. She died in 1993. It's 1996 now. She's gone." I couldn't look at him. I focused on the family portrait sitting in a small silver frame on the shelf. In the picture, Uncle Clyde sat on the floor of the dining room in his old Levi's and a gray t-shirt. Aunt Pat knelt behind Uncle Clyde, wrapped her arms around him, and rested her chin on his shoulder. Aunt Pat and Uncle Clyde's kids, Jenny and John, 16 and 18 at the time, sat cross-legged, one on either side of their parents. Smokey sprawled across Uncle Clyde's lap. Everyone smiled in the picture. My mom took the picture the year before. Uncle Clyde had learned of his mother's death about 7 times now. Every time, it came as a shock. "Aren't you going to finish your lunch, Uncle Clyde?" I wanted to change the subject. "Look at that. You haven't even touched your prunes." I struggled to keep my voice steady. "Those aren't prunes." Well, what are they then if they're not prunes?" "They're self-lubricating gargoyles." "I don't eat self-lubricating gargoyles. They're way too slimy." Uncle Clyde picked up the scissors and cut the placemat into tinier pieces.
That was Uncle Clyde, written and read by Vanessa Mariga. You know, Mariga's direct and honest and detailed presentation keeps that story free of sickly sentiment and adds power and depth to it. Mariga's next story tonight is called Nona. Let's hear that one now.
Nona by Vanessa Mariga. I pulled into the driveway of 1205 Martindale Road in Sudbury, Ontario. My Italian grandmother, my Nona, stood in the front yard amidst a sea of peonies, begonias, roses, black-eyed Susans, and a small garden gnome that she had bought on impulse at White Rose the week before. The floral pattern on Nona's silk skirt echoed the vibrant colors that carpeted her garden. I turned the key in the ignition and slipped out of my Mazda. Nona hadn't noticed my arrival. She whacked weeds fiercely. The shrill whine of the weed-eater meant that she didn't hear me. "Nona! Nona! It's me, Vanessa! Nona!" I stood in the driveway. Nona, caught off guard, whipped around wielding the weed-whacker. Nona flicked off the weed-whacker, tossed it on the ground, clutched her back, let out a loud moan, and grabbed her cane off of the lawn. "Vanessa, mio tesoro, come stai?" Nona hobbled across the grass towards me with her arms outstretched and a warm smile. "Nona, it's good to see you. Your flowers look beautiful." I met her halfway across the lawn. Nona cupped my face in her wrinkled hands and kissed me on each cheek. She wrapped her arms around me and squeezed until I felt I couldn't breathe. Nona's hair felt coarse from too many dye jobs and perms. She had left in a solitary roller that she had forgotten to take out when she did her hair earlier that morning. I rested my chin on her plump shoulder and returned the hug. Nona smelled like Oscar de la Renta and ivory soap. "You no imagine how much I love you. Que bellissima. Let's go in the house. I make panettone for you." I followed behind Nona as she toddled up the beige-carpeted stairs to the main floor of her house. The sweet aroma of freshly baked panettone mingled with a slight scent of pine sol. Julio Iglesias bellowed from a small black radio that sat on the kitchen counter. I surveyed the house. The sheer curtains in the bay window billowed gently in the breeze. The polished mahogany wood of the coffee table gleamed in the sunlight, and the antique sofa and chairs stood on the pink carpet, streaked by the vacuum cleaner. Framed portraits of me, my sister, my cousin, my aunts, my father, and my Uncle Walter hung on the wall above the television. Uncle Walter's picture, flanked with a crucifix on one side and prayer cards from his funeral 3 years before, hung on the other.
"You find it chilly in here? It's cold, no?"
Nona shuddered and retreated to her bedroom. When she returned, she had an old pair of jogging pants draped across her back like a cape, with the legs tied neatly in a bow around her neck. I chuckled.
"That's a new style I haven't seen before. Why don't you just put on a sweater?"
I pulled a chair out and sat at the large oval dining room table.
"What's the difference? Warm is warm, no?"
She brushed her blonde curls aside and placed a plate stacked with panettone on the lace tablecloth.
"Here, signorina, mange. It's diet panettone. I use olive oil instead of butter."
The dry cake stuck to the roof of my mouth.
"Oh, Vanessa, I had the vision of Uncle Walter. He came in my dreams last week, and he told me how happy he was. Then he cleaned my carpets."
Nona's chestnut eyes grew watery. She pursed her lips in a small smile.
"That's a strange dream, Nona.
So did Uncle Walter just give the rugs a quick vacuum, or did he give them a good hearty shampooing?"
"Vanessa, it was a sign. The next day, your father brought me a new television."
"Wow, that's beyond coincidence, all right. A dream of the dead cleaning your rugs always means a new appliance is on its way into your life. I think that I read about that in first-year psychology."
"Vanessa, you need to find Jesus."
Nona maintained a firm tone as she clenched her hand into a fist.
"I didn't know that he was hiding."
I peeped at her over the rim of my coffee cup and smiled. Nona shifted to the front of her chair, and she leaned towards me.
"Vanessa, you work all through the life. You work and work and work and work, then you get old. Then you get old and crickety, and the government will try to take from you everything. That is why you need to find Jesus. The government cannot tax Jesus. Your old bones cannot make crickety Jesus. Even when your family abandons you to sit and watch TV every day by yourself to rot in the corner, you know who keep you company? Jesus, that's who."
She pounded her fist on the table. I knew this speech. I looked at my watch. 5:30, Saturday, just in time for evening mass.
Okay, come on, let's go to church. I'll take you. Let's go and look for Jesus."
"Are you crazy? Look at me. I'm not dressed to go in church. I wish that you would have phoned to me before you come over. Then I'd be ready. Besides, it's crowded in there. I can't breathe. And I don't like the new priest."
Nona threw her hands up in the air, and I fell back in her chair. That evening, I took Nona, not to St. Patrick's Church, but to Tim Hortons instead.
That was Vanessa Mariga reading her story, Nona. The final story on tonight's program from Mariga is called The Color of Time. Let's hear that one now.
The Color of Time by Vanessa Mariga. I slid the Trinity Sessions by the Cowboy Junkies into my CD player. The evening sun slanted through the shutters on my bedroom window. Rainbows and shadows cast about my room. Patchouli incense simmered and diffused with the Northern Ontario summer air. I pulled my feet up onto my bed. The pale pink of my toes contrasted against the bright blues and yellows on my duvet. I rolled a bottle of nail polish between the palms of my hands. My mom taught me that trick to keep the polish from getting crusty. I met a guy, Neil, at my job with Teletech in Sudbury. My best friend Jen changes her earrings whenever an event of importance occurs. My sister cuts her hair. I paint my toenails. The next morning, I selected my open-toed, bright red shoes. I pranced into the office. My red shoes showcased the rich blue with a top coat of sparkles that adorned my toenails. The fluorescent lights buzzed overhead, and the incessant clatter of keyboards clicking filled the air. I strutted to Neil's desk. The little radio on his desktop, with the antenna sticking up, always made it easy to spot him among the aisles and aisles of workstations. I loomed over his shoulder till he spun around in his chair. Neil peeked up at me from under the brim of his pale blue corduroy baseball cap. The cap matched his eyes. "Hey, Neil, I brought you a donut. You look like you could use some sugar." "Vanessa, are you trying to ruin my girlish figure?" Neil's face broke into a smile. He took off his cap and tousled his light brown hair with both hands. Neil got a haircut in early May. It was now well into July. "Geez, Neil, that's a pretty crazy do that you're sporting today. C'est très joli," I grinned. "You like it? I call it the get out of the shower, stick your head out the car window, and drive 80 all the way to work look." Neil raised his arms high above his head and arched his back in a cat-like stretch. "Hey, listen, I don't feel too well today. I think that we need to take the afternoon off. Just go to the beach and have a lovely afternoon of conversation and sunshine." "Neil, are you asking me to play hooky?" "I don't know. It looks like you're coming down with something, too. Meet you at your car in 20 minutes?" Neil fiddled with the drawstring on his hooded sweatshirt and cocked his head to the side. His bottom lip assumed the standard pouting position. I couldn't resist. Half an hour later, Neil and I were at Bell Park. We sat under a birch tree and watched the groups of school children frolic in the lapping waves of Ramsey Lake. I kicked off my shoes, pulled my legs into my chest, rested my chin on my knees, and wiggled my toes in the tall blades of grass. The sun glinted off of the polish on my toenails. I sighed and let the heat from the summer sun wash over me. I still wore my good pants from work, but grass stains were the furthest thing from my mind. I looked over at Neil. This was the first time that I saw him outside of the office. Neil's skin no longer had that greenish tinge from the fluorescent lights. Neil had really nice arms. I never noticed before. At work, the air conditioning was always on, so he always wore a sweater. We chatted for 2 hours. My sides ached from laughing. Neil slapped his knee whenever he laughed. "Hey, Neil, are you coming back to Sudbury next summer to work?" "I don't think so, Vanessa. My old boss called and offered me a job as a manager of the warehouse back in Banff, under the condition that I stay the full 12 months. I'll keep a job driving a forklift open for you if that whole university thing doesn't pan out." Neil laid back on the grass, pulled the brim of his cap over his eyes, plucked a blade of grass, and began to chew it. "Thanks. I think that I'll trudge through school, though. I don't think that I can take much more of this working business." I squinted into the sun, wrapped a blade of grass around my finger, and tried to hide my disappointment. 6 weeks later, I sat in my human geography class at the University of Toronto. Professor McElraith droned on about the cod fisheries of the East Coast. I drummed my ballpoint pen on the desk and stared at the giant oversized map of Canada that hung on the wall. I found the big, black blob that said Toronto. I searched out the speck that said Banff. I connected the dots. Neil lives in a different time zone. I looked down at my feet. I had the same open-toed red shoes on. The polish on my toenails had chipped and faded. I retreated back to my room in residence after geography class. The hum of traffic floated in from Mississauga Road. I pulled the pink bottle of nail polish remover from the top shelf in my closet. The smell of the polish remover filled and stung my lungs. I drenched a cotton ball with the polish remover and swabbed my toes with it.
That was The Color of Time, written and read by Vanessa Mariga, and that concludes Life Rattle number 1303. Arnie Ackman recorded Mariga reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbery. Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.